Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can also find us at stevejonesshow.com, our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at Steve Jones PSU. Our shows are also available now via podcast. Of course, not only on the podcast page at stevejonesshow.com, you can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play. And if you listen to the Steve Jones Show podcast on iTunes, please leave us a review. You can also get in contact with us with our email, stevejones@wkok.com, stevejones@wkok.com. And this time tomorrow, we'll have our broadcast, our annual broadcast from the 26th annual Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. So we're looking forward to that very, very much. But we have a lot to get to here on today's show. We were able to get a couple of, since we were on yesterday, since 5 yesterday afternoon, we were able to get to join us on the show today. Rick Neuheisel, the former UCLA quarterback, former UCLA football coach and Washington head football coach, now a terrific college football analyst for CBS Sports, and also one of the guys you see every Tuesday nights during the fall on the CBS Sports Network show Inside College Football. Of course, Rick's in studio during the SEC CBS games that they cover on Saturday afternoons. So we'll have Rick on at 3:35. Rick was deep into the NFL draft last weekend, so we will get his takes on the NFL draft. Also, a big story in sports over the past week was the layoffs last Wednesday at ESPN. And John Arand will be joining us again on the show. John joined us last year to talk media when it comes to Big Ten football coverage on various networks. And John just released a story regarding the ESPN layoffs on sportsbusinessjournal.com and sportsbusinessdaily.com. So John will be joining us at 4:06 today. And we hope you join us again tomorrow. We'll have our broadcast from 3 until 5, our annual broadcast from the Susquehanna Valley Country Club for the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. Of course, our Sunbury broadcasting team, led by Steve, as well as the chief, Dave Ritchie, and our friend, a.k.a. the suit, Kevin Herr, be joining us as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely not the ringer in this tournament. I can tell you that right now. It's going to be up to Steve and Craig Vogel to carry this crew around. So, I can tell you that right now.
So Chiefs longtime friend and fellow coach Craig Vogel.
Yeah, they both started coaching Shikellamy girls basketball. Well, actually, Craig was coaching when Chiefs started coaching girls basketball. So we'll have a little bit of a flashback there. But yeah, it's up to it's up to Steve and Craig to carry this team. Dave and I are just there. We're there. We're the window dressing.
Then what's that make me? I'm just going to be driving one of the carts.
Yes, that's right. You'll be the driver.
I'll be the driver.
You'll be the driver.
We're talking. We're not talking about a piece of golf equipment here either.
No, I'm going to have my new GPS app out though.
Good.
Because
I'll follow you around.
I need every advantage. No, not to find out where I'm at.
Oh, for your shots.
Right. I need to find out how far I have to go. So, and it's always entertaining because I'll have my GPS app out, and I'm like, yeah, I'm waiting for it to update. Yeah. Steve's like, that's about 74 yards. Actually, 73 and a half. Steve.
Remind me before you go that I need to get your son's cell phone number. Because I need to contact him tonight so he can attempt to you know, check your bag tonight and hide the chutter?
No. He's at a track meetup in Montoursville. That's not going to happen.
Okay.
The chutter is safe.
What is this?
It's the Kevin Hirsch Show. Welcome, Steve. It's great to have you on as a guest today.
I was just saying to Kevin, I need Daniel's suit light cell phone number so we can conspire to hide the chutter tonight so it does not make an appearance at the club tomorrow.
Well, we can just solve that by hitting the ball in the green.
That would be an entertaining thing to have happen more often.
Hence your GPS, right?
That's right. There you go. The GPS will help me get to the green a lot easier.
What?
Well, you know the GPS I have on my phone that I used last year? You said it's about 74 yards. I'm like, hang on, GPS is updating 73 and a half.
So it's strictly for golf?
Yeah. Well, this app is, yeah.
Well, what's it called?
I don't know what this one's called.
Oh, wow. I do remember now that you did have that last year.
Yeah, it works out really well.
Yeah. Wakeman did not need it whatsoever.
Steve usually is in the ballpark, but I like to be, you know, I like to be a little more accurate, make sure I want to feel comfortable with my shot. That was a deep sigh.
To quote the great Jack Nicklaus, there are 14 clubs in the bag.
I've heard this.
And you only have one swing.
Yes.
You can GPS it to death. You still have to swing.
You know what Coach Hort said the couple of times that we played golf? He goes, you know what I like about your swing? What's that, Coach? Nothing. You can always count on him to be blunt.
But you hit the ball pretty well last year, I thought. Once you got warmed up, we played the back nine. After your hard episode on nine.
Yeah, that's out of the way. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
That was actually, I admit, I was like, we voted 3-0 to leave.
If you have a bad valve, you don't want to be walking up the hill to nine to the green if you're down to the left. That's your takeaway from that.
I drove down to get you. I told you to stay down there. I'll come get you. Right? I'm not the one that hit it there.
I know. Well, that was my punishment for hitting it there.
I mean, I'm not the one that hit it there. I was on the green. What the heck?
You know, I have never reached the green and that hole once. I've played it, I have no idea how many dozens of times. I have never been on the green on that hole. I've been 3 yards short of the green. I've been over the green. I've been on the roof. I've been to the left, but I've never been on the green.
Rick Neuheisel is going to join us today with John Oran. I'm trying to keep the audience here.
Yes.
the mandate that came down from management. I used a 9-iron, I think, on that hole.
I think you did.
Last year.
I was using like a, what was it, a 3?
Wood.
Yeah, 3 wood. You know, whatever you hit, I hit two clubs higher. And that's usually pretty accurate then.
Oh, okay. It doesn't really matter what you hit. It does not matter at all what anybody hits. It's whatever conforms to what your game is. Scott Walker, who's the general manager of the State College Spikes, is also on the Coaches versus Cancer Committee here. 2 years ago, under the category of good luck, bad luck, on the 14th hole, he scored a hole-in-one. Downhill par 3 on the white course. All right? And that's the good luck. The bad luck is that was the only par 3 that didn't have a prize associated with it. So at the banquet, I said your prize is recognition to the group that you accomplished the feat.
Yes.
Now, in terms of club selection, he asked me, he said, I hit a 5-wood there. What do you usually hit? I said, I usually hit a 6-iron. He goes, you hit a 6-iron on that hole? I said, yeah. He said, I said, Scott, it doesn't matter. I said, in my game, if I hit a 5-wood, I'd be way over the green. I said, I need to hit a 6-iron because that conforms to the yardage and the fact that it's downhill and so forth. I said, if you hit a 6-iron, you're not going to get there. I said, it doesn't matter. I said, it's the only thing that matters, you pick the right club that fits who you are.
Did you ever play out your way a little bit? The Mount Union? I think it was the American Legion course at Mount Union.
No.
They have a par 6. They claim it's the oldest par 6 in Pennsylvania. It is literally 650-some yards. I mean, I took a snowman on that and ate, and I was ecstatic because it's driver, 3-wood before you finally get to the last 100 yards, which is straight uphill. You have to pull out the biggest, highest lofted club in your bag to try and make it up the hill. I took an 8 on that. I was ecstatic. But, yeah, that one is humbling.
I think I played a couple of 600-yard holes. They were like 605. I'd never won that long.
You're
going to see a lot of them in the U.S. Open because the U.S. Open at Erin Hills is 7,800 yards.
Wow.
I've never heard of one a course that long before. So, now, next year, I think it's at Shinnecock Hills, I think. If it is, we'll just do the show there. Well, I'm allowed. We can do it.
So, hey, what's the advantage of your name being on the show, right?
Oakmont last year, sure.
I did show at Oakmont last year. Well, the key is to be able to get in. We can get in. So that's the good part. Well, we did the U.S. Women's Open when it was at Lancaster Country Club. They loved that course. So,
2018 U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills.
There you go. I think it's time to make a trip to the Hamptons. See Kevin's people.
You want
to know how all those people were able to acquire those homes?
I know what's coming, but go ahead. I know what's coming.
We're all involved in digital media.
There we go.
We've done more for your sales than you have.
Yeah, well, yeah, depending on who you talk to, you're probably right.
I'm sure I speak for the big man.
Hey, it'll be great to see you tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it.
I actually, to my left here, I actually do have your Rose Bowl, whatever the heck that is. Like it's a program.
The program?
Yeah.
That'll go right next to my other Penn State Rose Bowl program.
Great. Fabulous.
And my box of Wheaties from the, what was it, 1995 AFC Championship for the Steelers. It was a box that was only made in Western Pennsylvania. It still has the cereal in it.
Neil O'Donnell on the cover?
Neil O'Donnell on the cover.
Geez.
That is correct.
Rick Neuheisel will join us on the show today, and John Orrand of Sports Business Journal to talk about the problems at ESPN. Again, Rick Neuheisel, next half hour. Hang in 15 more minutes. Okay, that's all we ask. Hang in 15 more minutes. All right? There's certain times that certain people have to get something out of their system. All right? We've had what you would call a sewage backup here. All right, so we're just trying to flush the system. Hey,
listen, I was listening the other day, and I heard you do a promo for the Indy 500. It's May. It was time to talk Indy 500. I was getting excited. And then you said, it's not yet.
I said, no. It's amazing how when you have the pulse of the audience, you can do things like that. They're like, we don't want to hear that yet. Tell us, how excited are you about Carburation Day?
Oh, I love Carb Day.
Of course you do.
Yeah, you got the pit stop contest. You have the last chance to get tuned up for the big race. Actually, I like the whole month of May now that they have the Indy Grand Prix in May, 2 weeks before the 500. It actually really makes May, you know, makes IndyCar own May a little bit.
So what you're trying
more to
say is now May is your favorite month of the year instead of August?
No. August is still there because it's the start of football season and high school season and, of course, the Pocono 500. So
I tried.
Rick Neuheisel, next half hour. John Orrand, Sports Business Journal. Tomorrow, Neil Coulong on the Steelers draft. And we'll also have Steve Bortstein on about the Kentucky Derby. Coming up on Friday, Jason LaConfora from CBS Sports on the NFL and Dick Girardi from Churchill Downs.
Now, that one is one I want to have a close ear to.
Upper management sent me a text this morning. When's Mr. Girardi going to be on this
week? Yeah, because that's a money-making interview right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one you listen to and decide where you're going to put your money on Saturday.
Again, Rick Neuheisel on the show today. Dick Girardi will be here on Friday. Looking forward to the tournament tomorrow. What time do I have to be there?
The registration starts at 7:30, which means you'll be there at 7:55.
What time does it start again?
Registration is at 7:30. Shotgun start at 8.
Oh, okay. No, I'll be there in plenty of time.
Yeah. Actually, you were there early last year. I think you actually beat me there. It was scary. And you have a lot farther to drive than I do.
Yes, but I don't have... You were on your phone the entire round last year. I'm putting out fires. I'm solving problems. I'm putting out fires. Right? And meanwhile, not one of us knew that there was a fire or a problem to be solved. Right, we just kind of looked at each other. And then I got a hold of Sean. I said, what's the problem at the station? He says, no, everything's great here. All the dead wood's up.
Yeah. Someone was back here holding it down.
Tonight, I take out dust off the clubs. I have an adjustment to make on the new driver. Got to go to 10-degree loft, a little bit of draw, set that up, and we'll be ready to go tomorrow morning.
You're doing this show on Jameson right now, aren't you?
I don't think I've ever stopped.
This is, to your credit, this really is stunning radio.
I sense sarcasm in there.
Again, Rick Neuheisel. Next half hour.
Thank God I came through there.
I'll see you tomorrow. Have a great show, guys.
Could you call him now?
I got two numbers of his now. I could.
if you could call him now,
sure.
Then we could go to a break. Like at this point, maybe save the show. Are you going to show up tomorrow when we do the show out there? Are you going to hang around, or what are you going to do?
Yeah, I'll be there for a little bit to annoy you.
Again, tomorrow, Neil Coulong on the Steeler draft.
I want to know what he thinks about a long snapper.
It's a sixth round pick.
This draft stunk for the Steelers, okay? I'm not happy with it.
What part don't you like?
Well, I was lukewarm to the first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I talked about that via text. I mean, you said kind of the same thing. You know, he's a third down guy right now. Watt's going to be a third down linebacker. I don't think that's a first round pick myself. I don't feel as though they addressed the future need at quarterback because Ben maybe has 2 years left. I don't think they did enough to address the secondary.
Okay. Let me ask you, which quarterback would you draft this year?
See, I like the kid from Pitt. I think you could. I think he might have been developable.
I've watched tape on these people and seen him in person. Okay, he's a career backup.
This kid from Tennessee he's a good kid. There's nothing wrong with him. I just don't know.
Between you and him, I mean, the opportunity to put one of you in jeopardy, he'd be the choice.
I agree.
He's an aerospace engineer degree.
Totally agree.
Juju Smith-Schuster was an awesome pick. James Conner was a great pick. Let's see. In the Le'Veon Bell era, they played 6 playoff games. He's played 5 quarters.
I'm okay with that pick. I'm just, my question is, would he be around later?
And Juju is a great pick.
No argument there. There's 2 picks out of how many? I'm okay with those 2 picks.
Oh, what a relief. All right, bottom of the hour coming up. Sean, whose idea was this?
Well, we were waiting for you to stop in. We were having some internet issues a couple of hours ago, so as a backup, I just want to make sure everything was smooth and we'd cover it till you got there, and get everything connected.
It's an awfully shaky explanation.
I gave him money.
Now we're getting down to brass tacks here, okay? Don't forget, tomorrow, large dark roast with cream. That'd be great.
I'll make sure that happens.
Right, Sean, what do you want?
Just coffee with cream for me.
Good. Okay.
Yes.
Good. Are you writing this down?
Memory like a steel trap. I don't use paper anymore. Everything's digital for me now.
Okay, so I guess we're all right. Do you want me to drop yours off too, Sean? All right, we'll come back. Rick Neuheisel, next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You see him on CBS. You hear him on SiriusXM with Chris Mookie Childers, based on today's show. And that would be a guy that whenever Jack Ham and I kind of knock around a few things before we do a game, we usually talk about maybe some people we hear and that we really respect. Rick Neuheisel's name almost always comes up. Rick, welcome. It is a great pleasure for us to have you on the show today.
It is a privilege to be with you all today, especially given we're talking Penn State. What a great program. What a great year.
A great year indeed. The rebuild to get this back. I remember Bill O'Brien told me back in 13, if he said it to me once, he said it to me maybe 10 times. He said 13 and 14 concerned him because they didn't have enough scholarships to recruit linemen. Were you surprised at all by how quickly this has been able to turn in the direction it's in?
You know, in the aftermath of the Pitt game last year, where Penn State was getting beat badly early in the game, they obviously rebounded and made it a very close game at the conclusion. I was concerned that people would lose patience with Coach Franklin. You know, there are always going to be numbers problems when you go through a depletion of scholarships and have the kind of publicity that unfortunately surrounded the program for a couple of years there. But the way they responded, in particular the overtime win against Minnesota, I think changed things for a long time. And obviously the moves that Coach Franklin made in the offseason when losing guys like Coach Shoup and Coach Hand went to get really, really good replacements in there and to build the kind of offense and defense that won a Big Ten championship, I think is remarkable. I mean, the talking heads, myself included, all had it, you know, a race between Ohio State and Michigan, and it was like a horse race where someone just came from behind and absolutely just outran everybody. And the shame of it all, and I think those that had the opportunity to make sure this didn't happen ought to look at themselves in the mirror. The shame of it all is they Penn State wasn't rewarded. They should have clearly been in the Final Four and been the Big Ten representative in the playoffs.
You've been in an interesting position as a coach. You've seen all sorts of scenarios in your career when you did coach. Sometimes when you're trying to build to get there, other times where you're trying to, again, have a veteran football team and maintain and get better from that standpoint. When you're in the position Penn State's in right now, what's the challenge of a coach when you have a lot of returning players and expectations to go with it?
Well, to me, this is a much better situation than he found himself in last year. Given the situation last year and to take the chance, which you know, there's a risk associated when you go and try to change the formula with which you do things and hire a Joe Moorhead to come in and tweak the offense and do things. I had a similar experience at UCLA when I decided what we were doing wasn't working, and we went and tried to incorporate a bunch of the University of Nevada pistol stuff. I mean, that because there's only so much time you have as a coach to show progress, and if it doesn't turn out as well as you hope, or it has the, you know, the bumps in the road that almost all new things do, you may not make it to the finish line. And I'm you know, first example of such. You know, I didn't make it to the finish line. I think the guys that we recruited in the formula in which we did things proved to be very, very good, and UCLA went on and won a bunch of games in after I left. But for him to make the changes that he made and to get and have it bear fruit as it did last year, such to the point that he went past, didn't just catch up, but went past Michigan and Ohio State in the Big Ten East, I think is remarkable. So now that he finds himself with all these guys back, the key is to make sure that the leadership on the team, those that are talking in that locker room while he and the other coaches are not there, are as hungry, and making sure that those who are joining forces now with a championship program and, you know, wanting to have all the spoils that come along with championship programs understand the work that went into it and are as hungry as they were a year ago when things weren't as fruitful.
A couple of big picture questions. One is, you were talking about developing a team. In the off season, it's the strength and conditioning staff that gets 8 hours a week with them, while the coaching staff does not. Should the head coach have more leeway as to how player development in the off season should go, or do they have the right formula now?
It's the only sport we have in college athletics that doesn't allow the coaches to teach the respective sport, and it's a pure product of paranoia. You know, coaches just don't believe that everybody's going to adhere to a rule and so forth. I've said all along, we're all worried about how many hits the human body can take. We've got science out there about CTE and so forth, and certainly we should take heed. But kids want to improve at what they do, and we ought to have, I would say, 5 mini camps over the course of the year, spread out over the course of the year. I'd even get rid of spring football and have 5 different weekends or 5 different 3-day periods where you get to go and teach some skill, teach some concepts, teach some team stuff, and continue to build your team and realize that we're all looking forward to an upcoming season. I would tweak that as quickly as I could if I were commissioner for a day.
Under being commissioner for a day, about a third of those who entered the draft early for the NFL did not get picked. Yeah. What is your opinion on if any rule needs to be tweaked there, if at all?
Well, here again, the one that is losing out has no voice at the table, that being the player.
Right.
Listen, the autonomous five, the power five, asked for autonomy so that they might be able to do more and not be held down because of the purse strings of the group of five. They wanted the ability to do more for the student athlete. Well, this is a perfect opportunity. I'll give you the example of Noah Brown, the wide receiver from Ohio State, who decides he wants to throw in his lot with the NFL. He's given all sorts of good advice that, or what he believes to be good advice, that he's going to be a high draft choice. He had the big game against Oklahoma and Norman, and he's going to be, you know, he's a great athlete and so forth. But the rule currently allows for only 5 players from any particular team. Ohio State having had 7 draft choices, and, you know, the year before having had 12, only 5 of those guys get to submit paperwork to be completed by the NFL that comes back and gives him a grade as to where he might go. Noah Brown didn't get that paperwork, so he listens to those who tell him he's going to be a top, you know, day one or day two guy, and now he ends up 7th round with the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, he's going to have his chance, but Noah Brown, if given his druthers, might have said after day two, hey, it didn't turn out like I said, I'd like to go back to Ohio State. I think Urban Meyer would have loved it. People worry about whether or not there'll be enough scholarships. Every coach in the country has a couple scholarships in his back pocket tucked away for a transfer or the like, and if he couldn't go back to Ohio State, at least he could come back to college, just as we have the graduate transfer phenomena going across the country, and he can finish his degree someplace else. To me, we have to look out for the kid, and we can get the agents even further out of this deal. If we just tell kids, don't get an agent, go ahead and get ready for your combine on your respective campuses and keep working out, and then if it doesn't work out, you come back to school and finish your degrees at the same time continuing to develop your skill set, and maybe next year's draft will go much better. I don't understand why we can't do it. It seems pretty common sense to me.
Yep, no, I'm with you on that. Complete common sense on both the points that you made. Now, the next part about the draft. Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey did not play in bowl games, ended up going 4-8 respectively. Jake Butt did play in the bowl game, and I thought he was the best tight end of the Big Ten the last 2 years. He got hurt, ended up going on the third day. As someone who analyzes and as someone who coached, how do you feel about the decision about playing in bowl games now?
Well, that genie has left the bottle. You just pointed it out. Just imagine being one of those agents that I talked about, and I don't mean to act as if they're all terrible people. They do a great job, and it's a service and so forth. But sitting in a home of a prospective first-rounder, you mentioned the story of Jake Butt, or go back a year before that, and Jalen Smith, the linebacker from Notre Dame. And all of a sudden you can point out not millions of reasons why that was a poor decision given the magnitude of the game that they played in. It wasn't for a national championship. It wasn't a playoff game. They'll use the terms it was an exhibition game. Why would you do that? And the fact that the NFL drafted Fournette with the fourth pick and McCaffrey with the eighth pick showed that there was no ill thoughts given towards those two fine student athletes in their attempt to go to the next level. They still believe them to be quality guys. So we're going to see more and more of that, and that's just what's going to happen. So we have to protect ourselves against that as the NCAA game. And the ways to do that are, number one, the best way in my mind is to change the redshirt rule. Okay. I think currently right now we allow kids 5 years to complete 4 years of eligibility. Either change that rule to just 5 years to complete 5 years of eligibility so that everybody's eligible, and now when you get to the end of your season, you still have enough of a roster to make decisions, or guys are going to be playing the same position. You don't feel that pull that coaches always feel. Should I pull this kid out of his redshirt year, that late in the season? Everybody's eligible and everybody can play. Or if that's too big a step, the next idea I think would be, we currently have a rule that allows kids to play up to three games in a year, and if they get hurt, then they can qualify and get their year back. Let those three games be any time during the season, and don't make it be a medical injury that allows them to get their year back. If they play three or less games, allow that to be qualified as a redshirt year, and now you'll get quality play. And I think the bowl games, especially those that are considered less important, will be a lot of fun because fans will get to see some kids that maybe otherwise you hadn't seen that year, a freshman quarterback that gets to play because the senior quarterback is afraid of the injuries we just talked about and doesn't want to play. It'll be interesting to see how many kids will do it, but that number will definitely grow.
Interesting answer. You mentioned, you used the term talking heads earlier. You said, I'm now a part of that as well. Okay. So as someone who's been now on, quote, both sides of this, as talking heads, what do we talk too much about that you know from the other side as a coach that we talk too much about, and what don't we talk enough about?
Oh, that's a great question. What do we talk too much about? I don't think we discuss enough the importance of motivation. I think we talk talent discrepancies. We are ad nauseum about dropping the names that we've become familiar with and so forth. And clearly those kids deserve the notoriety and recognition they get. But in terms of getting a team ready to play and to get them to be at fever pitch, given that you're doing this 12 times over the course of the year and hopefully beyond, I don't think we understand the challenges that coaches have, not only just head coaches who are going to talk in a locker room, but assistant coaches, to get guys to the right level and the idea of getting those leaders on the team. Every coach that I know will talk about how important it is to have the locker room the way they want it and to make sure that those in the locker room who have captured the attention of everybody else are leading in the proper way.
Wow. You in Los Angeles, you could call maybe the cradle of possible NFL quarterbacks Sam Darnold and Zach Rosen, and Tom Bradley's told me enough about Rosen. What do you think about those two heading into this year?
had Darnold been available this year, he would have been the first guy taken in the draft.
Agreed.
I was at the Rose Bowl. Both he and Trace McSorley put on a show.
Yes.
I don't know if you knew this. I threw four touchdown passes in my game, and both of them had four touchdown passes in that game up until Darnold threw the fifth. My sons were crushed when it happened, and I was sitting there going, at least I was at the game when they broke it. I mean, it was.
I did mention on the broadcast that he broke it.
he was amazing, and I think he's a lot like Pennsylvania fans will like this name. I think he's Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
But Roethlisberger towards the back half of his career, where he became a pocket presence, he really understands how to throw from the pocket, and like Ben in his early years, when he gets out of the pocket, he's lethal. I mean, he makes plays. I remember coaching for the Baltimore Ravens when Rex Ryan was the defensive coordinator there, and one of his biggest coaching points to the Raven defenders was, don't sack Ben. Keep him in there. We want him throwing from the pocket. He's much less dangerous there than when he gets out. He's like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. When Robert Redford Gooden hit a bull in the backside with a banjo, and all of a sudden when he said, can I move? That was Roethlisberger. Well, Darnold has both of those attributes, and at a very young age, I think he's really sensational. Rosen, you know, still to be determined. He started his career like a house of fire. That game against Virginia, I thought, was brilliant. I saw his first game last year against Texas A&M where he really took some major hits from Myles Garrett and company. I thought he showed real toughness in that game, but obviously that season got away from him as he got hurt against Arizona State. I think much to still be determined. He does not have the same weapons that he had as a freshman. I don't know what's in the fold from a receiving standpoint this year for UCLA, but he gets a big stage on opening weekend as Texas A&M returns the visit to the Rose Bowl. So hopefully Jed Fish, the new offensive coordinator there at UCLA, can get him untracked, and if that happens, UCLA fans will be thrilled. He's got all the talent. We'll wait and see how it materializes in 2017.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your valuable time. We really appreciate it, Rick.
I appreciate being with you. It's always fun. I thought we were going to talk about Paterno and I doing Wild Thing, but we'll do that next time.
Wait a minute. I can't let you go on that. I mean, I just saw Sue on Sunday night.
Your producer just said, hey, now, we may talk to you about, you know, one of my greatest memories in all my coaching career. I get invited to the Nike trip 1996 in Jamaica, right? I'm this wet behind the ears coach. My wife hasn't even turned 30 years old yet, and we're on our way to Jamaica. And we're walking with our bags by the pool, and all the other guys who had arrived and their wives are all sitting by this pool, and I look over there and I see, you know, the greatest of all time, Joe Paterno. And I look at my wife, I go, that's Joe Paterno. And he looks over and he yells at me, hey, Neuheisel! Neuheisel! And I'm like, he knows who I am. And I go, I put my bags down and I run over there, and he says, get me a bourbon, you know, and get yourself one, too. I go over there, and I go, what kind, Coach? He goes, the good stuff. Uncle Phil's buying. So I bring the bourbon back over to him. He says, sit down, kid. He says, what are you doing taking your team skiing? I said, what do you mean? Because I had taken my team skiing. He looks at me and says, you're ruining the game. And I said, Coach, I'm sorry. He goes, no, I'm kidding you. And he goes into this, how I'm refreshing. I'm good for the game. The game needs more guys like me. And immediately, he's my hero, right?
Yeah.
Later that week, we're on stage. We're having this bingo night. And all of a sudden, they give me a guitar and say, "You, as the rookie now, you got to play a song." So I get up there, and I don't, you know, what song to play. It comes to me, I'll do Wild Thing. It's three chords. I can hang with that. And I go, Coach Paterno, will you come up and sing Wild Thing with me? Now, who in the heck in the world would believe that he would say, sure? And he comes up on stage. He prefaces everything by telling the story of Sister Mary Elizabeth and when he was in eighth grade, you know,
told him to
get in the back of the line, your voice is changing, and then that 7 years later, he did the same thing. You've heard that story a million times, I'm sure.
Joe's told me.
He gets up on stage, and I say, Coach, when I nod, you sing Wild Thing. Just scream it. So we did this, and I wish you could have seen. Now, this is 1996, before we had videos on our phones, but I guarantee you, had we had videos on our phones in that day, every person there would have had that thing up doing, watching Joe Paterno sing Wild Thing. It was one of the great thrills of my life and one of my all-time heroes, I can promise you that.
I know him for 32 years. He never did tell me that story.
Wild Thing!
All of us can do the impersonation in one form or another. Yours is really good. So.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Rick,
you made my heart sing!
Get out of here.
Groovy. Rick, thanks. What's groovy, kid? What's groovy?
And kid. You'd always say kid.
Kid. Now you know his authentic story when I throw the kid in there. Exactly right.
Exactly right. Hey, Rick, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you. You take care.
You too. Oh, my goodness. That may have been the single greatest segment we've ever done on this show. I never knew that story because, I mean, Joe would always tell stories about going on the Nike trip and things like that. So I'd always hear about his Nike trip stories. I never heard that one. Oh, we're going to talk about ESPN next half hour. Are we sure we want to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Imagine getting behind the wheel and looking forward to your journey ahead. If when you turned your car on, it did the same for you. Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury has the full 2017 Lincoln lineup ready to invigorate your driving experience with affordable American luxury. Well-qualified buyers can take advantage of $4,000 cash back and 0% for 72 months on the luxurious 2017 Lincoln Navigator. Or lease a new 2017 Lincoln MKX all-wheel drive for $363 per month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors Lincoln is your destination for affordable American luxury. Located in Sunbury in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and online at sunburylincoln.com. Financing with Lincoln AFS with approved credit. Lease based on stock number LB738, 10,000 miles per year and $3,900 total due at signing. Zero security deposit, tax and fees extra. Offer ends 5/3/2017.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.